Good afternoon, good evening, or good morning, depending on when it is you've tuned in to Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. My name is Jamie B. Donnelly. This is episode 12, season 7, and thank you so much for twisting the dial to your preferred podcast platform. Whether that is Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, or iTunes. We are now zooming our way towards the end of season 7. But before that happens, we still have a fantastic lineup of delightfully diverse guests to indulge in and to ensure that we all, for as long as possible, stay bloody poetic. And today, that episode is no different. Today, we are waltzing in bedrooms around wardrobes and televisions, while small insects glisten in the midday sunshine, lamps to light our way, highlighting women en route from the west to the Midlands, never to see the sea again. We are asking for kisses, but meaning other things, and hoping, praying, wishing that tomorrow will be better, though there's never a guarantee. We have guests here in Ireland, from Northern Ireland and over in England, to keep us entertained for the next hour. So I suggest you cut yourself a decent slice of cake, grab a chilled white or a room temperature red. Take your earphones out to the garden to catch those final rays of August sunlight and let the rest of the world fall away while my five guests on today's episode take you on their own poetic journeys. My name is Jamie B. Donnelly. This is Eat the Storms, and I hope you enjoy the show. Today we are kickstarting the Eat the Storms podcast with a poet who was one of the star guests at the John Hewitt International Literary Festival in Armagh in July of this year. He was there to read from his most recent collection, Because We Could Not Dance at the Wedding, published by Whirlpool Press. An exquisite waltz through a relationship that once had no place, taking turns in front of crowds on the dance floor. It's one of the incredible collections I've been reading this month as part of the Sealy Challenge, where you read one poetry collection, a chapbook or an anthology a day for the month of August. And therefore, it is our collection of the week here at Eat the Storms. This is not his only collection. He's also the author of Still This Need from Heaven Tree Press and Fossil Sunshine, also from Whirlpool. He is also the editor of two anthologies, Map, Poems After William Smith's Geographical Map of 1815, and The Tree Line, Poems for Trees, Woods and People by Whirlpool Press. His work has appeared in places like Queering the Green and The Future Also Makes Me So Thirsty, New Poems from the North of Ireland. He is from County Antrim in Northern Ireland, but now lives in London, was the winner of the Eric Gregory Award and an International Writing Fellow at the University of Iowa. Reading from our collection of the week, Because We Could Not Dance at the Wedding, this is Michael McKim.
Hello everyone, my name is Michael McKim. It's a pleasure to be here today to share some poems. Thanks very much to Damien Donnelly for inviting me to be on Eat the Storms. Today I'll be reading from my collection, Because We Could Not Dance at the Wedding, which was published by Whirlpool Press in June of this year. This new book is at heart a collection of love poems. It tells the story of my relationship with my partner Zach over nearly two decades. It's also, amongst other things, about coming out as gay, coming to terms and settling down. I thought I'd open with the title poem, which is about the first time Zach and I were invited as a couple to a wedding. Because we could not dance at the wedding. A ceilidh, designed for men and women, not the usual disco in the dark. The second you've one foot into the hushed hotel room, I take your right hand in my left, place my other on your waist, and we move, slowly, a waltz, three short steps between the bed and wardrobe, a crisp turn past the television. I've got you, you've got me. Within a minute, we work our way up to a bebop, clumsy in the bathroom, out again to the chest of drawers. Such a room you couldn't swing a cat in, but you swing me and I laugh like tin pipes. If they could see us now, half cut on smoky hard bag, exhausted, staggering, my love we'd cause a sober brawl all right. Earlier today I saw you from below, as if through all the hymns and speeches I was buried, grinded, my limbs constricted. But now I am level-headed with your head, your waltzing eyes, your smile, your breathing slow, deep, keeping time. I have always believed in a God who dances. There are three poems in this collection at the beginning, middle and end, which start with love poem with. They take as their inspiration birds and trees, the birds being a goshawk and sanderling, and the tree being a beech tree. The first one is about falling in love, while the others are about tender moments later in our relationship, and about finding comfort in uncertain times. I thought I'd read all three of these. Love poem with goshawk. It startled from behind a bank of earth. Birds shock black against twilight's burn, then unmistakable by its low pendulating glide between Scots pine. Under feathers like a shingle beach, those fizzing orange feet. The something other, the queer fella, the shy and skulky, the beautiful, the where have you been all my life, the nobleman, the sky dancer, the totem of the air, the breathy, gosh. Love poem with beech coppard. Another heavy night. The endless freight trains speeding past and curtains leaking light. I tried to think of the beech mast we collected in the woods on Saturday. Those little shells which crackled underfoot. The tiny three-edged nut they held so tight. But wake again. And so I start to grow around our room a veteran of beech. The coppice from the ground to nest our bodies, heads. Then a claw of ancient pollard encircling the bed. And while you sleep so fast and hard, I will attend the tree for birds, black beetles, bats, and keep the dead wood turned and see it safe in storm. I too might sleep. For what else but a crown of thick-set branches could protect our limbs, grown so well known that with a hug you now detect this woodland I've conceived. And pull me in against the fight, to dream in just the leaves, just woodland noise and woodland light. Love poem with sanderling. Love, I sing of sanderling, quickety, quickety, sanderlinging over pebbles, white as moon and graphite beaked. Little sand ply singing back to us across the knuckle-frozen estuary, its arctic morse. Hold me close now. Hold me close. Slowly, slowly, sanderlinger. I live in East London, and in many ways this book is also a love poem to my neighbourhood. Lots of the poems take their inspiration from simply what I see, often through the window of my flat or through the window of the bus. My final poem is one of those bus poems. It's about that day in spring when the daffodils just seem to erupt and the joy that they bring. It's also about endurance and pride and hope. Daffodils. The council in its frugal, simple stealth planted them last autumn. Those green and high-vis volunteers pushing little mines into leaf-flap mud. And now, as if a switch was flicked, they've detonated all over roundabouts, along the sides of roads, on brick-raised strips of grass that cushion the estates. Blocks and bands and concertinas, yin and yang and shooting stars, trailblazers brightening the feet of lampposts. There to catch the winter-weary cold bus window eye with the joyful, wild and singular announcement, this is spring. Flooding like a river through the churchyard, thick as a wheat field in West Ham Park, snow survivors reaching heads up to the trees with a raucous, here we are, we made it, please make room. We are the sunshine fallen from the sky. We are the darkness let to bloom. Thanks very much for listening, and thanks very much again, Damien, for inviting me to share some poems.
My next guest on Eat the Storms today is someone I have long been a fan of, but just recently got the chance to meet in person, even if it was rather briefly, in a hotel corridor during the John Hewitt International Literature Festival in Armagh. She lives in Dublin, but is originally from the Midlands, and is a poet, a fiction writer, and a journalist. And her most recent collection, Bog Treasure, was published by Arlen House, and it was a collaboration between Vancouver writer Janine Canizzo. She's been a recipient of the Catherine and Patrick Kavanagh Fellowship, a Hennessy Sunday Tribune Emerging Fiction Award, and has also published collections by New Island, Red Rua Art Centre, Tala Community Art Centre, Fiery Arrow, and as I said, Arlen House. With poetry and prose appearing in places like Daedalus, Faber and Faber, the Nordic Irish Studies Journal and Poetry Ireland, along with The Moth and Stinging Fly, I am so pleased to welcome to Eat the Storms for the first time, Eileen Casey.
Absence of Ocean. There's the story of a woman who left the West, married into the Midlands, who never saw the sea again. All those peat-baked summers, bog instead of beach, no sea blues, sea green scene, or songs to gather up in singing shells. No seagulls to drown out children, limpets on her sea rock. But the sea was in her voice, across her flat, unsalted landscape. Its rise and fall was like a smooth stone skimming. Accordion Man. Bellow strap undone, accordion pleats widen half stretch, release trapped notes. Somewhere over the rainbow flies bird-like over Main Street. Ringed fingers slide across buttons, glossy as a black swan's feather. He smiles a dazzle of glinting gold. Notes held an extra yard, swoon us beyond Bucharest, bushels of walnuts emptying into green grasses. I enter Sue Ryder's chorus on replay, follows me over and over the threshold, over and over that rainbow. Sky-coloured bridesmaid's dress on a tailor's dummy draws me to its side. White gown, veiled by yards of tulle, tempts me skim my hand across its silken narrative. Tin Man's Betrayal. Leather-fastened handbags sag on a hook, clasps with engine power enough to drive Sunday buses to Knock Shrine. Mary, Queen of the May. Women pray devout tunes on revolving rosary beads, lacquered perms, rouged cheeks and lips, ham sandwiches washed down with flasks of tea, recipe cards shuffled among saints' novenas, gossip sucked like lemony drop sweets. I exit the shop, Dorothy in search of her Emerald City. Big Bright Moon. An icy evening in winter, my brother and I danced, Kaylee mostly, in Rat Cabin. Music over, outside the hall, our breaths ballooned around us. No lift, but still enough petrol in our teenage bodies to walk towards Burr. Along a road dark as an oil slick, nothing to guide us but moon, big and bright. We chatted about who danced with who, what might have been but wasn't. My brother spoke of a girl he regretted not asking out for a jive. She left on another's arm. Also discussed, who went outside for a court. Flushed cheeks, a sure giveaway. Not one car passed us on that 5 mile journey. Wild birds skittered from hedgerows. Farm dogs barked, a ways off, alert to our passing all the same. I fell into a ditch, but my brother yanked me out, as if I was a calf being pulled from a cow. Thin shoes ruined, tights laddered, knees blistered. I began to feel cold. My brother gave me his jacket. Daylight was breaking when we arrived, into a town not long woken from sleep. Worried parents, too relieved to be angry. Decades pass. Memory retrieves what's worth keeping. When my brother got sick, he tried every which way to hold on to the dance. There were no more remissions, no more trials. In the end, he made it home safe. At his back, the same moon, so big and so bright. Circle and Square. Stood in my small tea chest, I peered at Mother, hunched over her sewing machine, foot on the treadle, lips pursed. Material shot through her hands. A bone shaker, she'd say, about the singer, if ever there was one. On my makeshift playpen's soft plywood rim, I chewed, relieving swollen gums. Outgrown, the chest flipped over, transformed to bedside table, storage underneath. That tea chest must have travelled Silk Road trade routes, as brought Marco Polo to Kublai Khan's palace, or tethered it the hold, crossed humid seas, port to port, China to UK, to Irish Midlands. Spidery leaves shuttled tea chest to scales to paper bag, ferried by a miniature shovel in Johnny Murray's corner shop. Sipping afternoons milky scented, weighed out by the ounce, Mother carried home in a cut-down sack. D-L-M-S, inked in red, all that remained of the Odlum's flower brand. Most likely it came from India, she said of the tea, being so dark, so strong-tasting. I fancied it connected to Tea Horse Road, ancient pathways through Yunnan, Sichuan, Tibet. Traders there travelled by foot, exchanged pack horses for tea. It said deep ruts in stone can still be seen, stamped by hooves, visible as teeth marks on that square-shaped tea chest, tiny indents mapping my world the whole way round. Nebulae. Their coming creates a stir, as if flamencos flock by the banks of the River Brosna. Such bright feathers startle Midland's grey. They pass through thin lanes, concrete constellations, connecting one street to another. They have come so far, a galaxy away. At times, heated outbursts stirred by their presence raise temperature. Where they are housed becomes an enclave some locals rename the Congo. I wonder if these asylum seekers ever went behind Burr Castle's walls. To marvel at Leviathan, giant telescope that tracked the heavens, discovered hidden star maps where Orion's sword should be. Built with patience, the third Earl found perfect allies, rendering such reflector less brittle in its cooling down, eliminates surface cracks and fissures. When they move westwards, they leave behind scuff marks on walls and floors, broken toys, names scrawled and scored onto metal with rusted nails, and a street renamed in their honour after the word Congo, meaning to gather, as a clutch of stars cluster in one space, their glow invisible yet undimmed.
Now, as a rare treat here on Eat the Storms, my next guest is actually two guests joining us today as a duo. And incredibly, this duo began in a Zoom room thanks to issue 2 of the Storms Journal, in which they both appeared, read online, connected, met, and then wrote a poetry collection together. And I cannot think of two brighter poetic lights to do this than these two people. And therefore, I am over the moon to welcome them back today, to hear them read not only from their collaborative collection, but also to share poems from their upcoming solo collections. She is head of English at a school in London, has appeared with poems in places like Rialto 100, Band Lilies, The North, The Interpreter's House, and of course, The Storms Journal. With work soon to appear in Under Your Pillow, an erotic anthology, she was recently shortlisted for the Urban Tree Festival competition and placed 3rd in Briefly Writes Poetry Prize, and that debut collection will be with us in 2024. He is from here in Ireland, from County Cork to be precise, and his debut non-fiction collection of essays on mental health called Lonely Boy, published by Book Hub Publishing, took us all by storm. Go and follow his blog Thoughts Too Big and all his social media pages, as he is a passionate mental health advocate and also works as head of content at Lust for Life. His poetry has appeared in places like the Ogham Stone, Berabua, Epoch Journal, The Madrigal, and of course The Storms as well. He won the Cork Arts from the Well short story competition in 2021 and was longlisted for the Kurt New Writing Prize in 2023. And his new collection, Enigmatic, is coming out later this year. I am absolutely delighted and a little bit giddy with excitement to hand you over to the poetic styling duos of Galia Admoni and Dara Fleming.
Hello. What's up? This is probably a bit unusual. Me and Gally are going to be reading together. So Gally, if you want to introduce yourself first, and then I'll do me.
Hi, I'm Galia. Who are you?
Who knew? And I'm Dara, and we're both poets, and we both actually met because we both were published in The Storms back in February, I believe.
It was.
And then we started chatting, and we after a few months we decided we'd write a poetry book together, and we decided to pick the titles by hand selecting random texts we sent each other, and that has become the poetry collection. So each title is a different text we send each other. We've both written a poem for that title, and the book is called And All the Titles Should Just Be Pulled from Messages. So it's very, I don't know about you, but it's not the way I've written before, but it was definitely a lot of fun, and definitely challenging considering the deadlines we gave each other. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been very interesting. So we're going to read 3 poems each, the same 3 poems, our version of each poem. And then I'm going to read 2 poems from my upcoming collection, Enigmatic, and Gally is also going to read 2 poems from a book that should be coming out from her soon. So that's the plan. So Gally, I'm going to make you go first.
Oh, really?
So if you want, do you want to start with Laugh When Necessary?
Sure. We should also say this is the first time that we are reading these poems. That's quite exciting.
It is.
Okay. Laugh When Necessary. Because the thought of him bedrooming with someone else doesn't have to hurt like fire. And the way there are no dog breaths accumulating in the corner anymore might not be a sadness. And he could be bored at the sink washing up, or on the phone, or out for a run. And you could be just a photo down the back of a cabinet, or still there in the not-so-secret photo album of exes on his computer. And he could have hung that Rockwell print in his new home and never even remember where it came from. But the box of forgotten things at the bottom of the cupboard needn't be a skeleton forever.
Amazing. Okay, laugh when necessary. And the quote above this poem is, "Life is too important to be taken seriously." And that, of course, is Oscar Wilde. When I said I don't make plans, what I really meant was, I'm afraid to make plans. Plans feel like commitment. We don't like that. Commitment gets us hurt. We really don't like hurt. I make vague plans. I plan to make no plans. I tell people that I trust my gut because it doesn't require proof. Life is too important for plans. Plans are too serious for life. I'm not serious enough for plans. Life is too important to make serious plans. I'm too scared to plan a serious life. Awesome. Okay, what are we going to go for next? Let's go for, would you like to celebrate? Would you like me to celebrate you in any way in particular?
So it's your turn to go first then.
Okay, fair. Would you like me to celebrate you in any way in particular? Face up with the whiskey dripping from your teeth. Your mouth is a cave now, and your teeth are the tobacco-stained stalactites. Or maybe, perhaps, instead it's mugs of tea, pour your own milk, soak it all up, but not so much that the biscuit breaks and falls in. How about a party you'd never be caught dead at if it wasn't your own, home by 11 to leave the dog in? She celebrates you best anyway. Highbrow, eyebrow raising, what the fuck are you at it all? Howling in the wind with the rain hammering the stones like it's late for work. Revel in 1,000 different ways on as many days as we can carry between us before anyone else catches on to what we're doing.
Lovely. And now for something spicy. Would you like me to celebrate you in any way in particular? I tell him I want to be in his poems. I want him construct. And this is a problem that solves itself. I am ambrosial. He has never written about getting head, never had head good enough to write about. And this is a problem I can solve. Challenge accepted. In only 8 weeks, we have come to the edge of something. I have an ache for that life and this life to be the only life, singular. And this is a problem I cannot solve.
Really good. Okay. And now for probably the weirdest poem we've written together. The next poem is It'll Be Geese, Water, Spider-Man, and Loneliness. And it's now your turn to go first.
All right. Yeah, I think this is the most challenging one. For me, it was the most challenging one to write.
Yeah, well, it's definitely all like aspects of my personality.
Yeah, you can tell this was one of your messages, that's for sure. Okay, it'll be geese, water, Spider-Man, and loneliness. At the poetry reading, he tells a story about drug dealers cosplaying as nurses to deliver the goods to their customers during lockdown. There's a photograph of you in a Spider-Man suit somewhere on the internet. I imagine what it would have been like to open my door to you back then. You'd goose honk my front gate. I'd offer you a glass of water for your troubles. Neither of us would mention the suit, and eventually I'd watch as you pedaled away.
Okay. It'll be geese, water, Spider-Man, and loneliness. It can be anyone behind the mask, I said. That's what makes him the most relatable. It can be anyone, you said. But it can only be one. It was a Saturday then, the psilocybin dripped from the leaves inside our gardens. The birds near the lake spoke secrets and flapped out the sounds of silver. I couldn't look at you directly. Your eyes weren't where they were meant to be. And that is the first official reading of our shared collection, which is exciting.
That was great.
So next, I'm going to read two poems from my upcoming collection, Enigmatic, which is coming out in October with Sunday Morning at the River. And I wrote these poems probably quite a long time ago, but it's cool looking back on them now because, one, my poetry style has definitely changed, and that's, you know, testament to our relationship. You've definitely made me a better poet, or like a more thoughtful poet, but these poems are still poems I really, really love because they kind of reflect the life I was living at the time I wrote them, and they're quite a bit more raw and less polished, and I really like that aspect of them. So first one I'm going to read is Heartache in Between. Heartache in Between. They shake my hand like men trying to sway my vote, and I smile and hope for a bathroom to escape to. In a coffee shop on a Wednesday, you triumphantly tell me that you've never read anything I've written. A dissolvable vitamin C drink spills and spreads into cream carpet as another woman sends another text to cancel a date last minute. And I sit here as the carpet stains, wondering what this is all about. What exactly is the purpose of all of this? And the second poem from the collection is going to be Wednesday Alone, which I spend most Wednesdays doing. But yeah, this poem was just a snapshot of one particular Wednesday, probably last January. Wednesday Alone. A man with salesman's eyes stopped by today to ask about the van. It's not for sale, says I, beneath a warm and cloudy sky. The first words I'd spoken all day. Later, a woman named Marika with tattoos all over dropped off a package. Again, I tried to talk, but she was in a rush. I must have looked half mad in the garden anyway, greeting her between flowers and vehicles that weren't for sale. The only other words I spoke that afternoon were to Lexi and myself, telling her that she was the best girl as her tail wagged, telling myself that tomorrow would be better, hoping I was right, knowing there was no guarantee.
It's really exciting that this collection is coming so soon, and I know that like even more people are gonna become fans of your work now.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, it is and you probably can relate to this as well, like once you've finished a collection, and obviously the publishing process takes so long that like you've lived with these poems for so long that I just want them to be out in the world now at this point. So I am very, very excited. And Rebecca at Sunday Mornings has been incredible. So shout out to Rebecca.
Great. Yeah. And speaking of poems that have been kicking around for ages. yeah, I'm going to read two poems as well from a collection that is due out hopefully next year. And I'm going to read two of my Joe poems. And they are, without giving too much away, I guess, about an imaginary Joseph Gilgan. And yeah, I guess stay tuned to read more about that. The first one is called Nighttime Fable. Can you kiss with those things in? And by kiss, I mean other things. You see, there's something about metal on flesh. Your gold teeth are cold on me. You take a bite of thigh, the fire spreads, and before too long I cannot help but turn my insides out for you. Notice where you place your hands when you go down on me. Towards the end of the week, you become more vivid and fuck me in the way I think you actually would. It's all about you. Our bedroom altercations ring out under the pom-pom trim pendant shade. You're there in the mirrored door of the wardrobe because I don't want to see the truth.
Amazing. Your nickname should be Galia, the spicy poet Admoni, I think.
They are quite spicy, but I think the thing that's really interesting about like both of our work is that although the subject matter is quite different at times, I think neither of us really shy away from the eye of our poems just being ourselves. And mm-hmm. I know that that's kind of like very controversial in the poetry world. People will say like the eye is not the poet, but I think we would be lying if either of us says that wasn't the case. So,
yeah, there is the rare poem I do where the eye isn't me.
Sure, but like mostly I think we're writing about things that we like have experienced either like in reality or within like our own minds.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, like, yeah, I think poetry, like for me, has always been a way to process emotion and try and make sense of stuff. So that would make sense for me as a poet, but other poets don't need poetry to do that. So they use it for other purposes. But yeah, that's how we roll.
Well, having said all of that, the poem I'm going to read now has nothing to do with me whatsoever. Okay. Joe dreams about his grandma Sadie, the smell of stale Super Kings, strong tea, and the machete in her drawer that could chop a child's head off. He dreams about his dad. He was a fucking hero, metalworking his way through the factory in his mind. A classic man of place, working with hard things, never hardened him.
Awesome. I like the line, he was a fucking hero. That's just...
Yeah, the stuff from that poem comes from an interview that I read with Joseph Gilgan in The Guardian in like 2019. And yeah, he was talking about his folks, I guess, and it stuck.
Awesome. I really like, because like for me, like writing a collection of poetry about a certain imaginary version of a person sounds like the biggest challenge ever. So I really like admire your ability to do that. And it's probably just because I'm such a self-centered poet, like I'm just all my really, really tough problems. But no, this has been great. And thank you to Damien for allowing us to read poems on the podcast. Obviously, it's a really special podcast. So I know we're both extremely grateful for that. And
yeah, this book wouldn't exist without him, really.
Mm-hmm. Very true. So yeah, other than that, I guess that's it. You can find us both on Twitter at our names on Twitter, which is no longer Twitter and is probably about to die. But yeah, I think that's everything. So
yeah, thank you.
And already it's time for my final guest on the podcast today, and this guest is definitely no stranger to this podcast and definitely no stranger to me, as we have been hoglets together from quite some time now, which means that our poetry pamphlets and collections in the past have been published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press, and today she is here to share poems from her upcoming collection, soon to be published by Hedgehog later this year, called Toccata and Fugue. Her work has appeared in numerous journals, both online and on print, including the inaugural issue of The Storms. And she has won and been shortlisted in many competitions. And her collection, Where Flora Sings, also from Hedgehog Press in 2020, was nominated for the Laurel Prize. Based in Northampton in England, she leads a poetry group there and tutors a Hebridean writing retreat. Always a joy to have her back as a guest. This is Margaret Royal.
Hello, Damien and listeners. Thank you, Damien, so much for inviting me back onto your podcast again. I'm delighted to be here and to read for you a few poems from my forthcoming new collection called Toccata and Fugue, to be published by Hedgehog Press. My name is Margaret Royal. Here's my first poem. It's a memory of growing up on the chilly Lincolnshire coast with teetotal Methodist parents who had a big influence on my life. Blackcurrant Wine, inspired by Ruth Stone's poem, Pokeberries. I started out on the chilly Lincolnshire coast with my granddad's thriving tomato plants and my Nana Kate's country superstitions. Tea time meant dripping on toast or a boiled egg. My mum would polish the red linoleum till it shone. She married my dad, her childhood sweetheart. He adored her, despite her blind eye and thick glasses. They went to Southport on honeymoon, nearly drowned in a yacht they took out to sea. My parents were devout Methodists who played hymns on our old piano and were teetotal. My dad preached Sunday sermons in far-flung chapels where communion wine was blackcurrant juice, alcohol-free. My whole upbringing was based on the Methodist faith. I could not escape it. And there were many factors complicating my life until a new man started work with me and I ran away with him, living at first in a holiday camp chalet. I stuck with him, despite his wandering eye and penchant for pretty women with red lipstick. We were welded like superglue, like the stuff my uncle once glued his fingers to the hen coop with. But come what may, no one could completely shake religion out of me, not my granddad, nor my Nana Kate, nor my parents, who didn't just attend chapel on Sundays. They haunted it, along with the temperance wine. My second poem is a memory of living in London in the swinging 60s and all the wonders of the fashions then, miniskirts, maxi skirts, King's Road, Chelsea and such shops as Bieber and Bus Stop. But of course, my mother didn't approve of this fashionable attire. The swinging 60s. Argument over a maxi coat. My mum threw me that sideways glance, said I looked absurd, that nobody wore long coats nowadays. Did I want to make an exhibition of myself? I said everyone my age had them in London, trendy in Chelsea, uber cool to wear one. No one would turn and stare unless with envy. What's more, you'll not walk with me to chapel in it. I forbid you. Do you hear? She raised her head, peeved, trying to disown me. In London, I aspired to be the epitome of cool, a sex goddess, popping into Bus Stop or Bieber for a cheeky little Barbara Hulanicki number. Back in my hometown, not so. Whispers, gossip, faces behind neck curtains. I rebelled, determined to shock prim neighbours. Look at me, I'm one of those weird hippie chicks. I'm sure God doesn't care what I wear, I said. Remember Mary Magdalene, Mum? She was a prostitute, but Jesus loved her. My next poem is from the middle section of the collection called Intermezzo, and it's reflections on how I felt different sometimes, the restraints that were put on me by church and school and family, and I rather felt like I was a stranger looking in from the outside. So this poem is called Misfit. Feeling different. Standing on the edge of the circle, I watched from a modest distance. Unlike theirs, my shirt was made of calico, yet equally fit for purpose, I imagined. I was unacknowledged, overlooked. Perhaps the shirt had missing buttons, an omission that excluded me, painted a bindi on my forehead, only visible to them. But how could I remedy this? I had no buttons that fitted the holes. Their shuffling feet trampled my breathing. Mud-heavy voices spoke in a language unfamiliar to me. Had I betrayed myself? A wolf in sheep's clothing? They turned to stare with cold contempt, yet simply found a sartorially confused stranger. They mouthed spiteful words, but I could lip-read. Now was the moment to confront, to protest my allegiance to their tribe. Yet instead, I turned. I fled. My buttons did not fit their shirts. They never would. Moving now to the third and last section of my collection, the fugue section. Here, each poem is linked to a favourite piece of classical music and to an artist's colour, reflecting the two great loves I have in my life, music and colour. This is called Amber. Mellifluous beauty, nectar of the gods. Minute resin crystals, less dense than stone, yet too dense to float. Heterogeneous in composition. May contain small insects glimmering like midday sunshine, a lamp to light the way. My amber ring, my heart stone, a love token brought back by my husband from Tajikistan, adorning my ring finger, set in a silver scroll, always with me. Guardian of what was, soothsayer for what may be, honey for life's future burns, key to unlock memories, never to be erased, life's ebb and flow, glinting gold, winking in fractal moonlight, a forever friend, eternal love. My final poem is a poem of grief. Sadly, I lost my husband 25 years ago at quite a young age. And the music for this would be his favourite music, Rachmaninoff, Variation on a Theme by Paganini, Opus 43, Variation 18, which I'm sure many of you will know. And the colour would be his favourite too, blue. The Blue Hour, a tribute to my late husband Gary. I remember him best of all in Norfolk, our family sauntering through evening meadows, the Blue Hour weaving its special charm. We floated on air, hovered above limpid streams, each in-breath held, waiting, each of us part of a collective rhythm, exhaling softly, lungs squeezed like a concertina, spectators in nature, speaking in whispers, respectful, this territory theirs, not ours. This was a world where vulnerability cowered, the fleet of foot, wily of wing, here, then gone. Water voles in velvet suits, puppet fox with invisible strings, playful, crouching low, then scenting danger, slinking back to the leash. a swoop of ghost owl, hunter with razor-sharp teeth, wings scything the dusk. Then a curdling cry, a field mouse trapped in the pincer grip of talons, life inextricably linked to death. A privileged viewing, yet looking back, I sometimes question the reality. Was it simply a dream, conjured up with him at the heart of it, where he always was? Thank you so much for listening. I've been Margaret Royal, and it's been a pleasure to read for you some of the poems in my forthcoming collection, my third poetry collection, with Hedgehog Press, To Carter and Fugue. Thank you to Damien, and thank you all of you for listening.
Thank you so much, Margaret. Thank you so much to all my guests on today's show. Now, just before we leave you, I'm going to celebrate a little birthday celebration that's coming up. It's not only the first birthday of my full poetry collection, Enough, which was published by the Hedgehog Poetry Press last year on the 29th of August. It's also almost a celebration of my birthday, which is the exact same day. So therefore, I'm going to read you a couple of poems from that full collection, Enough. Enough is separated into seven sections, and it's about my time and my love affair with Paris and my time living there. There is a very large chocolate cake in front of me today, so therefore I've decided that the poems I'm going to read today from this collection are all to do with eating, food, or other things. And this first poem is called Cinq Rue des Irlandais, Five Streets of the Irish, and it's set in the Irish College, Collège des Irlandais, in the 5th arrondissement of Paris, where I first lived when I moved there in October 1997. Cinq Rue des Irlandais. Unpolished expats. Crumbling croissant breakfasts at the far end of a crisp hole. Missing those milky teas and smothered bacon the mothers would have forced down throats on rainy days. In houses far from this place, not yet called home. A convent the Polish left to the Irish, who then left drunken trickles of cheap wine on every table on Muftar, next to the marketeers of Place Mange, where we all tried cheese that stank like stale socks while we wore the same socks for consecutive days to save on laundry. I found Hemingway here, later, who had been there earlier, and Julie too, who had nothing in blue. A movable feast, he called it. Movable. We were too young to be celebrated by any feast, too young to be owners of anything except green gills and half hopes. The hope for a little heat and butter with breakfast. A letter in the post before it came coldly on computers later, without a trace of that longing etched into lines of each individual letter by every single mother. All things change, like ownership, taste, timings, the things we held onto and the others we let go of, like that concept of a home while forever in motion. We had nothing once in the cold end of a big hall in Paris in the 5th, by the Pantheon with all its buried heroes, and the Sorbonne with all its protesters who departed by our day, having since surrendered their brave boots in time for softer souls. The second poem is called 62 Rue d'Alésia, 62 Street of Elysia, and it's set in the restaurant Le Zayer, where Henry Miller and Anais Nin used to dine, date, and desire. This is in the 14th arrondissement of Paris, and I lived there on my return to Paris in my 40s. 62 Rue d'Elysée. I used to sit here, sipping cocktails I couldn't afford, just because you sat here years before me, drinking lust from lips that weren't yours. I used to sit here in the heady heat of all you had eaten of each other, wondering if I stayed long enough, would I be able to taste what it was like to devour all that desire? I used to come here to scribble down all I might one day forget, and I wondered if she forgot you as quickly as she turned the page to the next date in her diary. This next poem is called Three Boys and a Girl. Three boys and a girl, diving from teens into 20s at the end of the 90s, wearing hangovers like La Légion d'honneur, hot under summer's press and last night's sweat, still sweet. She laughs, he blushes, and we fuck. His naked imprint for days against the glass. Reflections of cuts yet to be made. Some things are only meant for the moon, like stars and darkness and emptiness and his lips. Three boys and a girl in a summer's park. One fair, one dark, and the flippant I'd recently flipped off and over, now stuck like sweaty patches under arms you can't avoid looking at, sniffing, wondering how long they'll take to dry off, sitting, sweating, smiling, lusting at large in a perfect park, in the heat of his sweat, her smile, and those eyes burning ourselves with the first tastes of belonging. Le Select and Le Capole are two rather famous restaurants in Montparnasse, and it is where myself and my friend Mary very often on Sundays used to go to sit and watch life pass by and share our own life stories with each other. So this is called 98 Boulevard de Montparnasse, 98 Boulevard of Montparnasse. We met often on Sundays, too old for Le Capole, but nostalgic enough for a slow seat at Le Select, wondering if it was Hemingway or our own Beckett who'd left the brolly on the stand. An unclaimed link to a time now meandered into myth like we were. At times together, apart, same road but different directions, coming in to catch up over cuisine as traditional as the easy step of their formal waiter who oozed professional but held friendly for others after. We sipped on selected Sundays, quelques coupes de champagne, amid the outdated gentry with coifs and curled moustaches and curious colognes, sitting next to history hunters who wondered where Picasso sat and was the light right on their profile just in case. We too came in curious with odd colours, chords we'd been curating in our sketchbooks, curious as to whether someday someone would wonder where we sat, would wonder if we were the owners of all those brawlies they wanted to grab hold of in the hope they'd feel the weight of a purpose. We met often on Sundays, always sandwiched in between the heavy courses of foie gras and côtelette d'agneau, and sipped champagne while we served each other accounts of our own liaisons, and watched to see if one aroused the demand of a dessert. In Paris at La Valette, there is a cinema that has a terrace cafe on front of it, Quai de la Seine. And on the wall of the cafe, there are certain expressions like je t'aime, to say, I love you, you know, and dégueulasse, disgusting. This poem was inspired by that. It's called Diving In at Quai de la Seine. Je t'aime, tu sais, you said. A la terrasse where divers jumped into worn water that wasn't even warm anymore. Dégueulasse, I thought. How willing we are to slip into currents others already caressed. His stream, her flow, their bath, those breasts waiting at turned tables to be tasted. Seats still stained with the scent of the previous participant's perspiration. Je t'aime, tu sais, you said. On that terrace, as couples climbed out of the cinema and let go of hands, holes the darkness held so much easier than the cold light tossed back from those worn waters of the Letts Basin where divers descended into things previously tasted. Je t'aime, tu sais, you said, and I, embarrassed by a lost breath, held my chest as if something was reaching down inside to pull out the air from the organ, while you glanced around at other tables with other offerings. Je t'aime, you said. Je sais. And finally, this poem is called A Scent to Sail You Back. The lilt of lavender that lingered long after, by the leaning before the Louvre. The blossom of fallen rain, making its way around the curve of every cobble. The seduction of Greece, sandwiched into the darkness of a grec before the dawn. The sweet consolation of candy floss cologne that clung to the pillow after you left. Sometimes it's that simple. A scent to sail you back. Well now, I hope you've just passed a good evening, good afternoon, or perhaps even a good morning with us here, because we've just reached the end of another episode of Eat the Storms, the poetry podcast. Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning in. Whether that has been on Spotify, Apple, Google, Breaker, Podbean, Player FM, Overcast, Castbox, Podcast Addicts, or iTunes. I have been your host and producer, Damien B. Donnelly, and it's been a pleasure to keep you company for the past hour, and what company it has been. I have had the honour of being surrounded by the brilliant Margaret Royal, Eileen Casey, the duo that we never knew we needed, that was Galia Admundi and Dara Fleming, and of course the author of our collection of the week, Because We Could Not Dance at the Wedding, Michael McKim. As always, for details and all of my special guests, head on over to the website, that is www.eatthestorms.com. Click on the podcast section called Listen to the Podcast, and there you'll find a blog post for every episode. This was episode 12, season 7. In that blog post, you will find photographs of the artists, photographs of their collections, links to where you can buy the collections, along with their bios, their social media handles, and their websites, so you can go out and be a full fan. Now, we just have 3 episodes left of this season of the podcast. And then, of course, in October, we will have a very special episode that will be the online accompaniment or the audio accompaniment to The Storms Issue 3, which Nitti Kassa, my sub-editor, and myself have just finished. All the selections for the emails have now been sent out. And over the next coming weeks, we will be highlighting the artists, and I'm so honoured and proud to say that I really believe this issue is going to compete perfectly with our previous 2 anthologies of poetry, prose and visual arts, with huge thanks to the Fingal Arts for their support. The theme of this issue is Shelter, Sanctuary and Sanctum. So keep an eye out for details and all the launches. We will have a live launch here in Dublin, a Zoom launch that will be directly in your living room. And of course, we'll also have the audio accompaniment here on the podcast, all coming over the next few months. But for now, that's it from me. Next Saturday, on the 2nd of September, I will be a facilitator in an Ephrastic poetry workshop at the Donabate Library here in Fingal. Thanks to the Right Time Festival, and a huge shout out to its wonderful organiser, the incomparable Anne MacDonald. Thanks for the invitation, Anne, and for keeping me in such fantastic company during the John Hewitt International Festival in Armagh earlier this year. Now, please check out the Right Times Festival, check out their website, because there is an astonishing amount of absolutely incredible workshops and events happening for the month of September. In the meantime, enjoy those fleeting rays of August sunshine. I'll be with you again next week from 5 p.m. on your preferred podcast platform. And until then, make sure that you all stay bloody poetic.
Oh, thank you.